Caramcast. Welcome to the Caramcast, episode 14. It is April 16th, 2009. I have my co-host, Amy Lynn Chadwick, with me.
Hello.
You've started a blog since last we did this.
Yes, I have.
What is it, amylynnchadwick.com?
It is, but I'm finding it hard to actually start the process of blogging.
Why is that?
Because I'm not used to it, and I don't want it to become a journal of all my woes and concerns. I want it to be interesting. So that frightens me from actually writing anything.
It's an interesting thing where you're writing and discovering yourself and your process and publishing it to a global audience at the same time. I can see how that's daunting.
Yeah, it's a little frightening.
But what's interesting about blogging is when most people first get into it, they think that blogging is journal writing.
Exactly.
Like a live journal used to be, or blogging on a MySpace blog. The thing that's funny about that is that most of those people have also been reading blogs every day, but they've been mistaking them for news sites or their favorite recipe site or whatever. Most of those sites nowadays are actually just blogs that are well-crafted to make it feel like a magazine, because what blogging really is self-publishing.
Yeah, and these big blogs actually now have advertisements on them. And
absolutely, you have to monetize your time and your work. This is something that I never thought I would say when I was a teenager with pink spikes for hair. But it makes a lot of sense. If you want to stay home and just do things at your leisure and how you want, then why not make some money doing it? You won't make a lot of money doing it, because I would say 90% of the people that do it probably don't break enough to buy groceries once a month with their work. But that doesn't mean that anybody couldn't figure it out, because a lot of the people who do make a lot of money, I mean, six figures, they're committed and tenacious and clever, but I wouldn't say that they're somehow otherwise extraordinary or remarkable. They figured out how to identify their target audience, how to consistently deliver content to that audience that makes sense to them, how to be the best in their niche, and they do all this other stuff. And I've been writing a lot about the actual process of blogging. I've been blogging about blogging because I spent the last 9 months really delving into that world. And you start to learn names like Darren Rouse, who created ProBlogger, and Yaro Starik, who's this another Australian that has a whole email list and gigantic program that you can go through that teaches you how to create video blogs and podcasts and monetize everything. And Caroline Middlebrook, who's another Australian who is making lots and lots of money at home by blogging about blogging. And one thing that all of these guys do is they understand the process of consistency and continuity and always adding people and giving things away for free. Once you have that attention of that many people, you can make a lot of change happen.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. But
well, it's quite intimidating at first, though, when you first, you know, stand in front of, oh, now I have a blog. I'm expected to create such a thing. And
well, the irony of that fear, though, is that we wish everybody was reading your stupid blog. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we wish that somebody was reading all of our bad writing and our misguided, directionless ideas.
Well, I wouldn't say it's bad writing.
Well, I'm sure yours is great. The truth is, it's not that easy to get a lot of people to come and read your stuff. Unlike on Twitter, where people jump on there and they don't know at all what they're doing, and they start tweeting all sorts of nonsense, not understanding what Twitter is about, and realizing that on Twitter, you can get a lot of viewers really fast. Because what Twitter does, it's called the microblogger, because you only have 140 characters to spit out your idea. What Twitter does is it's got a main page, and all the new tweets fly up that page, and basically anybody in the world who's in Twitter land can see those tweets.
I first signed up for Twitter about a year ago. I didn't know what the heck it was. And I made my tweet like, oh, it's raining outside, just to test it out. A year later, all these people start adding me. All of a sudden, this whole Twitter boom comes up. And now all these people are seeing my silly post, which I thought was completely personal for one person who was my Twitter friend.
Yeah, you can make your Twitter timeline private, but like MySpace, most people don't know this when they get started. When you go on MySpace and you see someone who's got 15 or 20 friends, usually they're set to auto-accept any new invitations. Yeah. They get spammed to death because they don't understand some of those things. So that privacy thing isn't usually something that someone sets up right away when they use Twitter. But let's talk about Twitter for a second.
Crazy,
Twitter,
man.
Has had an explosive growth. Just when I thought I was late on that one, and I jumped in and I started understanding this really weird dynamic about how when you do post, you actually end up losing some followers. But when you don't, you get a whole bunch of followers. I guess it depends on why people signed up for you in the first place.
They have this option where you can select to have it sent to your mobile device. Well, I wanted to test it out, so I saw Lily Allen or whatever. And at first, she said a couple witty things, and then the past 2 weeks, it's been this nonstop, like every 5 seconds. So I had to delete her.
Yeah, the thing about Twitter originally was that it was a way of posting to people's cell phones, short messages, text messages, so that rather than you just texting your one friend, you could text anybody who wanted to follow your tweets, and that way you could set up groups and so on. What it's being used as now is completely different. And the thing has grown so fast that the very people who created Twitter are really not prepared to handle it. Their infrastructure is still pretty wobbly. Google has sort of been hot and cold about buying it. They've valuated the company at about $200 million now. But at the same time, Facebook just changed its entire interface around the way Twitter works. YouTube integrated a Twitter sharing button right on its front page. And the funny thing is, you think, of course they did, because everybody tweets. Not at all. I wrote an article on one of my blogs called blogging-fool.com that actually talks about how if you actually get into Twitter and understand Twitter now, you have a 5-year head start on the mainstream. Well, that's not to say that Twitter will necessarily exist in 5 years. It may or may not exist as Twitter, but tweeting as a practice will definitely exist. And if you start to grasp that now, you're still way, way ahead of the curve. Everybody who's involved in it is really just learning and defining and understanding it as it goes. That's not to say that if you get in right now, you'll be hugely successful and famous because you were early, but you're definitely in a time where a whole new paradigm is being created.
It just like blows my mind that within the past 2 years even, there's blogs and Twitters. And I know they've been around for a while, but all of this stuff has just blown up so quick. And it's just so many new things and so much information and so much technology that I never thought I would be one of those people, because I'm always on the no, I have to know everything. But I never thought I would be that person that really
gets
felt
left behind.
Yeah, that really felt like, oh, I'm old. I don't know about these things these youngins are doing. It's like,
right.
It's overwhelming. It makes me have anxiety.
You know, the last week there was a virus that started stalking the Twitterverse, and it actually would grab a hold of your profile and then it would post tweets on your behalf that said, go to stalk site, S-T-A-L-K site, S-I-T-E. Now I just promoted it. Anyways,
I know, like,
that's how
why?
Viral it went. But, and it caused this huge panic and everybody was freaking out because it was one of the first big Twitter viruses, worms really. And they eventually found the person that did it was a 17-year-old kid who had created what he thought was a better version of Twitter because it allows you to also tweet pictures and video and stuff. And he wrote this little piece of code and set it on fire so that it would promote his site to everybody out there. Now, of course, he admitted this. He admitted it to the media.
He was like, yeah.
But he's 17 years old, is my point. Not only does he grasp Twitter, he grasps how to hack Twitter and he grasps how to make a better Twitter. So that's why I'm saying I don't know that it'll be called Twitter in a few years. Twitter's definitely revolutionary. The reason that also that something like that becomes powerful is when you see, for example, the riots in Mumbai or the earthquakes in China, the very first people to talk about those things are people who are tweeting it, actually. And with Twitter, you can actually use hashtags, which is the pound sign, to define certain groups. like you used to in the old internet relay chat days, the IRC days, where you could create a channel on the fly. So you'd have this wide open internet and you'd say, enter channel Amy Lynn Chadwick. And all of a sudden, a channel called Amy Lynn Chadwick exists, and anybody else can enter that now. And the first person who was there was the administrator by default, and they could automatically set up all these parameters and stuff. Well, Twitter sort of has the same thing. Interestingly enough, it's not really a part of the interface, but you could create a channel called Channel There's a Riot Going On in LA. And then every time you tweet, you add that little hashtag with that name at the end, and everybody who's on that channel would follow it. And you can actually subscribe to that channel. You can say you only want to see that channel, or you want to post exclusively to that channel. So it can get pretty complex pretty quickly. And that's when it starts to make a lot of sense. I mean, if you want to get a lot of followers, the cynics and the realists about Twitter are sort of admitting now that the real point of Twitter is to have the most followers. The way to get the most followers on Twitter is to start posting to specific groups. And if they're large groups where a lot of people are following them, let's say you tweet at a hashtag like South by Southwest. So you would write pound SXSW. All the people that are on South by Southwest will see that tweet. Do you see what I mean? So you can focus it, and that way it's not just sort of out in the wide general, but by targeting it, a very specific group of people starts to read your stuff. The problem with that is if that group of people comes on side because they think you're interested in South by Southwest, and then the next day you're writing about gardening or building cars, you start losing all those followers again.
My question is, though, for all these people that know these secret codes or whatever, maybe they're not so secret of Twitter, but those people that want to know about them, where do you even find the means to learn about it?
Is there
a place, though, where you can go and read a manual on how to use these websites, how to use these functions?
Well, the amazing thing about the web these days is that everybody's sort of developing it as they're using it, like a toaster. Imagine that while your toaster is sitting in your kitchen, other people are constantly coming in and tweaking it and finessing it and expanding what a toaster can do. Now, you can lock your apartment and not let those people in, or you can go out there and see what are other people doing with their toasters and how can I apply that back to my own or whatever. It's a really interesting time like that. And it actually leads to something else I wanted to talk about very quickly, which is the element of crowdsourcing and cloud computing and all of that.
Mm.
We could go on and on about all of these topics. I'm not speaking as a Twitter savant or a blogging expert
today.
And
I'm not speaking as a Twitter idiot.
because these are huge topics that we could cover in whole episodes if you, the listener, let us know that you're particularly interested in one of them. But I'm also just talking about these sort of from the outside in, because really, it's always crazy to talk about the zeitgeist, to talk about the right now, and to talk about new tech, because this thing's already dated. As soon as I publish this podcast, it's old news. So think of this more as a catalog. The way that William Gibson, the science fiction writer, used to write really weird sounding stories like Neuromancer about some time where people are in this alternate reality and they're doing all sorts of really bizarre things in this alternate universe that's really happening now. Now William Gibson writes about the present and how weird it really is. And I've mentioned William Gibson in this context before in the podcast with books like Pattern Recognition and Spook Country. He's writing about right now because that's weird enough to be science fiction.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So cloud computing is this thing where companies will harness, or organizations will harness, the vast array of computers that are out there and make that power available to anybody who wants to rent or tap into it, like as if they're turning on a faucet from the resources provided by water and power. For example, if you go to Amazon and you can rent the power of the Amazon cloud, you can basically pay to use huge amounts of processing power. Not just storage space, but huge amounts of processing power. Let's say you wanted to run some crazy algorithm, some calculation, render some 3D movie or whatever, you can actually rent the CPU power. That's the cloud. And that's a term that, for some reason, they can't simplify. every time you look up cloud computing and the cloud and everything online, the explanations are ridiculously complex.
It's wicked trippy.
Yeah. Crowdsourcing, which something some of you may be familiar with, is like outsourcing work, except you're doing it essentially to an anonymous group. You're just putting it out there. It's like the cloud, except instead you're using human resources instead of CPUs. So something like Amazon's Mechanical Turk, somebody might have, let's say, 5,000 pictures that they need to add keywords to and catalog and whatever, or just vote up or down. They can actually offer to pay a penny or 5 cents or whatever the market will respond to have people do the work for them. So they will anonymously say, okay, I need you to rate this picture or tell me or describe the contents of this picture. And then we go at it. You sign in, you make an account as a worker, you can accept that hit and you just go through one hit after another. You say, okay, this first picture is an elephant on a green background, and you click enter and you make a penny and you do it again for the next one and you keep going. So that's crowdsourcing. And it's an interesting way for you to make money, or if you ever need to get a lot of work done for you for very little money. But there are other interesting ways to make money on the web that are coming up all the time. And these are not shams and scams and get rich quick schemes. These are how to make money on the web through these micro sort of processes that are going on. Amy, do you want to talk about some of the other ways that people can make money these days on they're so interesting.
I found a couple.
Okay.
All right. One is you can solicit tips on the internet, believe it or not.
Sure.
You can go to tipjoy.com and you can add it to your Facebook page, your website page, or your Twitter page. And you can text your Twitterers to actually give you a tip for the entertainment they're receiving from you.
So you can actually have people tweet money at you.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could lose money that way, because, you know, sometimes I post some of my ideas on Twitter and people like leave me behind. So I wonder if they can actually take money from me for being an idiot.
No.
No. Okay.
I think there's like a one way kind of.
All right. Now, what are other interesting ways that people can make money these days?
You can adopt blogs instead of trying to make your own blog. You go to Orble, O-R-B-L-E.com, and you take over a blog.
Interesting. Well, what's the catch?
It's like a blog that's been abandoned by a writer. And so you can start a good Google ranking from it and just make it better. So if they have like a good domain name or whatnot, or something is good about that blog, only it's been abandoned, you can actually take it over and fix it and make it even better.
Okay, and what's the service get out of doing this for you?
They take a cut of your AdSense.
Okay, AdSense is ads that are created by Google that are context sensitive or relevant. You'll see those everywhere. Whenever you go to websites, you'll see these little things that say ads by Google. And those are micro-targeted ads that Google identifies based on the person who's reading the content and the nature of what is on that content. And so this company, Orble, will apparently, they have a catalog of good domain names and established blogs that have been abandoned. And you can take one on and you basically repopulate it with new, fresh, exciting content.
And these blogs aren't just crappy little blogs that were lost. They're good Google rankings.
Yeah, it's hard to get a good Google rank because that is a black art, understanding how the Google rank works. I mean, people chase it around and they try all sorts of tricks, but Google changes that algorithm so often.
It's kind of like foreclosure.
Yeah, it's like a foreclosure. You're taking over someone else's home.
Yeah.
I mean, we almost always risk pod fading with the Karamcast because sometimes it's so long between episodes. But the truth is, as long as we keep going, no one will ever know. Essentially, imagine that we stopped and we just got bored of it and we didn't feel like doing it anymore. Somebody could come in, poach Karamcast.com, and just start making new podcasts using that name and its established listener base. And then they would split the AdSense commissions from the site with Orble.
Yep. That's crazy.
That's cool. Well, it lets us come full circle about blogging and the Twitterverse. We're going off to NAB as press, actually, in a couple of days to Vegas, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention 2009. for 8 days.
Try going to Vegas for 8 days. See how you walk out of there. That's all I have to say.
The most interesting thing about this year's NAB, I think, is that they just added a whole day dedicated to video games, which is to say,
yes,
the organization that is essentially about and behind and created by television broadcasters and radio broadcasters is actually establishing within its curriculum a whole area devoted just to video games, because they're acknowledging the legitimacy now of that entertainment platform as its own unique broadcasting platform.
Mm-hmm.
And there are estimates and projections that what was a $32 billion industry in 2005, that's larger than the entire film industry and record industries combined, is going to be a $75 billion industry by 2011.
That's crazy.
That's because, as we've mentioned before, video games encompass almost all of those other things. They are social platforms. They are vacations. They are entertainment.
When people can't afford a stress relief, they're that too. I know people who just want to get on, they want to get on a Grand Theft Auto or whatever and just shoot a bunch of people.
I'm just giving you a funny look because I'm wondering what kind of stress relief do you want to afford exactly?
No, I don't know.
You mean like a massage?
No, some people go on there and just like to shoot things.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely good
that way
stress
they don't
relief.
Go aggro in traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I meant.
I love The Onion, that satirical paper, The Onion. The other day they had a headline, "New game allows you to just shoot people point blank in the face." So we're going to be at the NAB show, and we're going to be reporting for you from the ground floor what we see, what we discover. Because it's one thing to go there knowing what the program is. It's another thing to actually be there and be surprised and shocked and amazed and discover things you never could have imagined. So thanks for listening to this episode. We kind of wanted to keep it short and sweet, but as usual, we have too much to talk about. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts and ideas and how you're doing at info@karamcast.com. That's info@karamcast.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
As a final note, if you want to follow me on Twitter, just find @constantchange. That's capital C, lowercase O-N-S-T-A-N-T, capital C, lowercase H-A-N-G-E.